Welcome back for the Fundamental Principle. We have a wonderful lineup today. A lot of old friends. Jerome, how you been, bud?
I've been fantastic. I want to thank everyone for their support. I was at an IRL thing in Oregon this past weekend. I got to meet our friend Pete Quinones, Dave Riley from the Backlash podcast, Thomas 777, Stormy Waters, a whole bunch of other folks, and numerous people who were at that event. We're thankful that we're doing the project, and I got to say that was some wind in the sails when we really needed it, because it's a bit of a thankless job sometimes. But when people tell you, like, oh, you convinced me to go back to church, or my wife and I are going to homeschool, or we're going to have kids, or something like that, because of your little podcast project, it's quite the boost, and I really, really appreciate the kind words from everyone.
Yeah, it's definitely refreshing to hear. I wasn't there, but I appreciate everybody for reaching out to Jerome about it. We have an old friend of mine, old friend of the show, who's my original co-host, Augustine. Welcome back, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Welcome.
It's been a hot minute since I've been here, but it's good to be back.
And then Arno, our friend.
Friend of the show.
Absolutely.
And proprietor of the excellent survey.
That I am. Thank you. I'm doing as good as can be, just preparing for that colder weather that's soon to be upon us. But you know what? That's part of life, and it speaks to the liturgical season that is about to be upon us with Advent soon. To be here in a few weeks.
I'm glad we're having. We're not going to talk about this today, but I'd like to have you back on eventually. You translated your project, The Daily Fight, correctly translated liberalism as a sin, with some things that weren't previously added. That's rather, I think, important. So I'm going to link that in the show
notes. Book is.
Yes, absolutely.
That required reading.
Yeah, definitely required reading, and then especially the Spanish version is much more nuanced and even more to the point, because in the American dialectic of understanding a liberal, you know, they just think of it as a progressive movement, you know, in terms of the left-right dynamics that we see. But in the proper essence of what Father Salvani Isardo was saying, was it's more this anti-Catholic, anti-clericalism, and very distinctly an enemy to the state that he was trying to get across to his Spanish audience. And it's much more polemic in that sense, in terms of it highlighting these things much better. Whereas like the American version, it was adapted for the American audience. So there's definitely at least 7 to 8 chapters that are missing. And there is some very distinct language that is missing, because in the Spanish version, he actually calls out the monarchies as being liberal. Whereas in the American version, they don't even mention that. So.
Yeah, that betrayal of their blood. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. You know, that they did in the 17th, 18th, and especially 19th centuries, is why they fell. I mean, because there was no reason to, like, why be a monarchist if the monarch is going to give you the same results as the Republicans?
Yeah, exactly. And then, I mean, this kind of could potentially be a segue into real discussion here. Is we see how the liberal monarchies were treating their own people in the German Reich with the Habsburg Empire. You know, they were giving the Slavs preferential treatment over the Germans of that era. And so, of course, the native Germans were getting upset with losing their position of power in the parliament.
Right.
And go ahead, yeah.
To use an example of why, like, the universal Catholic Empire of Charles V is a pipe dream. Men in the Low Countries could have been welded into one coherent nation. But they were broken apart on matters religious and political, because the men in the Low Countries rightly saw that, like, they were being used as cannon fodder and tax cattle for Spaniards. And some of them were offended by it, and some of them rebelled, and they used religion as a bit of a pretext. And there were some genuine theological issues between the Calvinists and the Catholics. But if there had been a king in the Low Countries that was interested in, you know, the benefit of the Low Countries, Belgium, Luxembourg, the Netherlands could have been like a coherent Catholic nation. But when you were asking them to go die and fight and pay taxes to a Spaniard who's going to say, well, I'm your king too. But like, how, what interests of a man in, you know, Bruges is like Spanish silver, you know, and the state building people of the, of the Habsburg Empire were the Germans. They were the ones who, you know, did most of the work they did. And, you know, the minority was restless and complained a lot and kind of lived off the capabilities of the others. And we see that here in America, right? Who are the state building people of America? You know, the white people or the, you know, the Boers and English and Anglos in South Africa. And do they get anything? No. Like in our current dispensation, you know, the state building people, the people who go to work, the people who pay the taxes, the people who obey the law, they get jack. And the people who, you know, are parasites and steal and break the law and commit crime and don't work, they get everything. And you see that not just in the United States or not just South Africa, but in Canada and all over the place. And, you know, the church has nothing to say about this. You know,
I mean, it has something to say. We can just go to some tweets from Leo.
Yeah.
In terms of coming along with the migrant and having a more open, merciful borders, because, you know, they're just coming for opportunity, right? They're not going to hurt us. But again, as we see with the actual reality, nothing could be further from the truth. Yeah. And so, again, like you said earlier, we're being betrayed by our own clergy, seemingly. So,
I don't know. Obviously.
Not seemingly, we are.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
So it's come to a point now where the mainstream Catholic Church has become a subversive element on par, or almost equal to, like, international Jewry in some instances when it comes to importing immigrants from the third world into white countries. It's become quite a clown show.
Well, I mean, it's as subversive as Global Jewry for the simple reason that they're an NGO in a Zionist occupied government, and so they do what the government wants, right? That's when the government shutdown snap thing was illustrative, because it just showed you how many people are utterly dependent on, you know, taxpayers without contributing much to the economy or to social peace or anything. If these people were like poor hermits who like were fed off the public fisc, and they spent all their time like in Eucharistic adoration praying for the repose of the souls of people who had died, I could be like, okay, well, you know, they're eating like two bowls of oatmeal and like a minimal amount of protein a day, and they're like whole, like, okay, I could see some sort of public support. But no, they're not. They're violent. They're parasitical. They're, you know, right. This is not what we're getting. And in a similar way, like, if Walmart, without SNAP money, that's like 20% of their profit margin, right? And they're able to pay their employees low wages because their employees qualify for welfare. And so they don't have to pay just wages, and they don't have to pay just prices to their suppliers. So they can offer undercut prices and, you know, right, all this stuff. It's all just a government. It's all just various different forms of extraction of the taxpayer. And the USCCB, right, 20% of their money, or 25% of the money, I can't remember exactly how much, comes from the federal government and asking for migration stuff. So, you know, if I cut any of your gentlemen's budget by 20 or 25% or even 15%, it would be a crisis. It would be a crisis because that's a major problem. And so when the church is sitting here saying, well, we just do what the government tells us because we're paid, like, okay, no wonder you don't care about saving souls. Like, you're just a government NGO, and I shouldn't, like, am I going to go listen to the Department of Transportation about how to save my soul? No, because that's not their job. Well, if your job is, you know, bringing in migrants, where, you know, to Canada, to the United States, to Europe for government money, you're not a church anymore. You're just a subversive organization full of homosexuals and apostates.
And it's much worse than 20%. It's actually 50% of their organization's budget as of 2023. In 2023, they received $130 million from the federal government for immigration resettlement alone, right? Oh. And then since 2021, they've received a total of $450 million for refugee assistance. It's absolutely insane. And so, of course, the bishops are complicit. But then also, you're right. We have, like, these other quote-unquote Catholic NGOs, right, who are – they're not even run by Catholics. You know, we go to the – who are the higher echelon of the board of some of these Catholic NGOs. It's the same small hat people.
It's a lot of Bergbotsteins who are the head of, you know,
exactly.
Refugee services and
Catholic exactly.
services. Yeah.
It's absolutely insane. So – yeah, they've just become an arm of the essentially the UN global agenda and an open borders agenda, a la George Soros type of thing. So
and it's been a problem for a very long time because mm-hmm. if you look at the history of apartheid in my country, the Catholic Church was a voracious enemy towards the system, and gave shelter to the terrorists and, you know, facilitated them coming in and going out of the country to receive training in whatever communist hellhole they went to, you know, Angola, some went to Russia, some to Congo, you know. And it was the church that was facilitating these things, you know. So it's been a problem for a long time.
Well, it's fundamentally, I mean, what you guys started this project, you know, what, 5 years ago, when you said, like, either, you know, liberalism is a sin, as Father Salvato correctly points out, or that it's true, right? Like, which one is it? And you can't have it both ways, you know? If, you know, like, in 1938... you know, certain clergy got put in summer camp, and most of those clergy were like communists and perverts, and they deserved it. And when the church, like, destroys the state or attempts to or help, assists in destroying the state, like, they should be, you know, like, they're not working for the common good, you know. Like, apartheid was the common good. No, at 30 years later, after 1994, it's been 30 years. Yeah. There's no, like, oh, well, maybe it'll work out. No, it was a mistake. It was wrong. Eugène Terre-Blanche was right. And the people who undermine that society should be punished. Right?
Mm. And so it kind of ties us into what we wanted to talk about today. Especially, like, if we're going to... Do we want to do the Kennedy Hall stuff, or do we want to do this article? Because I can go either way with it.
Go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah, we'll listen to Kennedy Hall first, and we'll circle back with the article.
No, we cannot.
Okay, I don't know how to do that. Anyways, so I can link it in the show notes. I put it in the prep chat. I have to figure that out later. But anyways, he talks about how... he goes back and forth about how the race isn't part of the church, and that while the church has always been a spiritual institution, it's never been, it's, while it supported the sciences, it's supported understanding the material world, it's never been its focus on saving souls. And I don't understand how somebody can claim to be a traditionalist and still have the same political opinions as the United States bishops. This guy goes through the SSPX, supports the SSPX, but has the same like liberal positions as the people he's resisting against. As we're talking,
And I've reached out to Mr. Hall multiple times, and he recently had a death of a child, and so, please pray for him. That was pretty terrible. His son was born with a genetic condition that didn't allow him to live for more than a few hours, and his son was baptized and communicated and confirmed. So his son is now a saint, and we should be grateful for that, but at the same time sad for Mr. Hall's family. It's a terrible thing that happened. But I've reached out to Mr. Hall multiple times privately. I understand that not everyone understands the race issue as well as I do because they haven't studied it. Like, I wouldn't presume to, lecture Augustine about South Africa. I know a fair bit about South Africa for an American, but I'm not going to. Right. So I'm not going to tell Mr. Hall he's wrong about matters of religious when clearly he studied the society far more than I have. I've read his book. It was a very good book about the society and the defense of it. And the truth is, right, that white Christendom is being attacked on the basis of race at the particular moment. And that's why, tens of thousands of young men listened to the Stone Choir podcast, because the Stone Choir podcast was the only podcast I know of besides this one, and maybe perhaps a couple others, that would honestly deal with race issues and remain faithfully Christian. And if you don't want the church to like implode over the plain obvious fact that races differ and that those differences often have real world consequences that are, deleterious to the white Christian nations that are accepting these people, then you're going to have to deal with this. Nick Fuentes only has a following because Nick Fuentes was one of the few people in the live stream game. He's very talented, obviously, but he only has a following because he was the one willing to tell young men, like, you're not crazy. You are being discriminated against. Women are a problem. Race is a problem. Jews are a problem. Like, when everyone else is like, there's a torrential downpour outside and everyone else is like, you don't need a raincoat. Like, what? What are you talking about? Like, you need a raincoat and an umbrella and rubber boots and, an underlayer to not freeze. And everyone is telling you that, race doesn't matter. Well, 50% of black children are on SNAP in America. The 50% that aren't on SNAP, their parents work for the government. How is that not a racial issue?
Or they did work for the government. We'll see what the Doge numbers come out. I think a lot of them were. A lot of the Doge fired a lot of black women from, laptop jobs. Which is only, I don't know how everybody feels about that, but it's like, it's also a loss of income for families. Which is devastating. Sure, are they a problem? Yes. Should they be here? We can discuss it, but it's, feeding kids is important. Trying to educate kids is important. But I think the loss of income is going to be devastating for some of these people who have families. So we have to keep a base level of charity and concern.
Well, a base level of charity is one thing. Go ahead.
I was going to say, in terms of a base level of charity, right? I don't think throwing money at people is a proper form of charity. I've been rereading Mein Kampf recently, and so I'm still early in the book, but Hitler likes to bring about elevating the man above his means, not just by giving them philanthropy dollars, because what do? They go ahead and they squander it, and then they use all their money at the beginning of the week, and then by the end of the week, they're running out of money, and then they have to go back and do the same thing over and over again. They're not changing the way that they should be living if you want to be a productive member of society, and that's the big point that Jerome is bringing up here. We're just throwing at people who have no thought or regard to improving themselves. And that is a very distinct and racial characteristic, unfortunately, of that race. If you were truly trying to help them, you would ideally be showing them a trade or something that they can make a livable wage, and raise them again out of that hellhole. But they're seemingly happy in that hellhole because that's what they've become accustomed to.
Well,
and so nothing changes.
Well, and the richest blacks in the world were American blacks. The richest blacks in Africa were South African blacks. In 1993, in the richest, what's the term I'm looking for, Augustine? The black settlement.
Right. Yeah.
I forget. There was a technical term for
with the Bantustans.
Yeah, well, the richest Bantustan in South Africa, whichever one it was. Okay. Mm-hmm. They'd had Christian missionaries. That, you know, one of the first things the Boers did was send out missionaries. So they'd had Christian missionaries on and off for like 350 years at this point. In the richest Bantustans in South Africa, in the richest ghettos in America, the richest black neighborhoods in America, you saw massive amounts of crime, trash everywhere, single motherhood, sexual profligacy, unfaithfulness. Like, it didn't matter where you went. Trinidad, with its vast oil reserves and making it one of the richest black countries in the world. You know, Jamaica with its beautiful beaches and massive tourist industry, right? Like, it didn't anywhere in the Caribbean, anywhere in Africa, you saw these same vices all over the place. The United States, Canada, the Haitian diaspora community in Montreal, like all across the world, you saw these same virtues. And what people tend to forget is that, like, from about 400 till, you know, the end of the monasteries, basically the Benedictine order, like, genocided single moms passively and with compassion by saying, oh, well, you had a child out of wedlock. Congratulations. You're now Sister Marie Agnes, and you're going to spend the rest of your life, like, in prayer and good works to make up for the fact that you've done this terrible thing. And once the baby's weaned and able to be taken care of by others, like, the baby's going to go to a foundling home, and he'll be brother so-and-so for all of his life, and he won't have any children, but he'll do his life, you know, in prayer and good works. And in Europe, not only did, like, single motherhood, I mean, it happened, right, you know, but it became non-normative, and it was, you know, people weren't killed for it, but there was punishment. There was not this endless stream of public funds to just support that endlessly. You know, the Daughters of the King in Montreal, right? Like, they were poor women who were given a chance, like, okay, if you want a dowry, like, go to Quebec and get married and have kids. And they all had like 9 kids apiece. And they're the, you know, where the French, the Quebecois population comes from. And so it's not like the church was against supporting poor people to, you know, live good lives. It just insisted that they do things right. And there's no, you know, whatever Kennedy Hall might say. I was talking to my friend Jose Nino, who's from Venezuela, yesterday, and we'll publish that later this week or next week. But, you know, mestizos in America went from 65% Catholic in 2010 to, you know, this, like last year, they're 45% Catholic. So that's a 20-point drop in, it was like two-thirds Catholic in 2010. 2023, it was 45% Catholic. So that's, you know, a 20% drop in just 15 years. So is Endless supporting these people making our country more Catholic? You know, per the you know, like, oh, they're conservative and they'll be
at least,
yeah, like, where's it?
At least they're Catholic, yeah.
Right, yeah, at least they're Catholic. No, they're going to be like,
and even if they are Catholic, they're nominally Catholic.
Right. It's, well, even... it's always a mile wide and an inch deep, and you know, to the extent that there are traditionalists in the southern hemisphere in Latin America, they're white. Bishop de Castromaer, God rest his soul, this lion of tradition, he was 100% white. Bishop Gallardo in the society, you know, he's Iberian. This is not, you know, a 5'2" mestizo man who yeah, just came out of the jungle last week. His ancestors came from Europe. And, you know, to the extent that tradition exists in South America, it's almost exclusively a European phenomenon. Germans and Spaniards and Portuguese, white people and Italians. And without that, like, guiding hand of frankly, white overlords, look what happens to, you know, mestizo countries. Like, there's riots in Mexico right now about their president, the Jewish president, because they forsake their, you know, the Iberian Catholic overclass that led them for, you know, hundreds of years. And until you, like, deal with this these realities, right, you're not addressing the problems. You know, you, the church is on fire and you're like, oh, man, this pew is really dirty. I've got to clean up the pew. Like, no, the church is on fire. Church is on fire. You've got to do something about that. Like, yeah, okay, maybe like a naughty child, like, got some crayons and smuggled them in and was, like, writing on the pews, you know, during mass, and the church and the pew is covered in crayon. That's a problem. I don't want to condone that sort of thing. Like, but like, the altar being, like, on fire is a bigger problem than, you know, the little child saying, "I love mommy" in crayon on the back of the pew. Should the little child do that? No. We got to put out the fire first. Like, you got to say the Blessed Sacrament. It's on fire. And, you know, Mr. Hall, again, like, I've enjoyed his writing. I've tried to reach out to him privately to try to get him to discuss this issue in a civilized fashion and tell him, you know, like, look, I know that you know more about it. American Reform knows more about it. Arno, you've written persuasively about it. Augustine, you've talked about it. Like, there are people who would operate in good faith that know more about this issue that would reach out to him and be like, let me show you where you're wrong. And there's a real problem here, because the young white men that are now filling the churches back up, because they've grown up in this nihilist society and they're seeking meaning, and they're seeking it in, you know, real meaning, which is to say, in, you know, the Catholic Church, to a lesser extent, in the Orthodox Church. And the only reason anyone in the West is going Orthodox is because our bishops have been so spectacularly terrible in these last 60 years that they've lost all credibility. That's a separate problem. If we had bishops like Archbishop Lefebvre as the norm, then I don't think that the whole boom that you're seeing in Orthodox converts would be a thing at all. But to bring up my friends at Stone Choir again, right, the only reason they have an audience at all is because the church, small c, the Lutherans, the Baptists, the Catholic Church, the Orthodox Church, has just so lied, or just gone over this issue to focus on minor things like the, you know, the modern equivalent of dealing with a graffiti on the back of a pew, that they're either checked out or they're just not listening to the bishops and pursuing their own Christian faith in their own way because they can't trust their pastors.
Yeah, I'm just going to jump off it. Barry, go ahead.
I'm going to go first.
I was just going to say, just in terms of Mr. Hall, too, it, of course, from a Catholic perspective, you know, the understanding of the French Revolution is purely seen from, you know, obviously it overthrew the monarchy. It tried to create this egalitarian system. And of course, yeah, we see the disastrous results in terms of the number of prelates and nuns and Catholic faithful who are murdered during that revolution. But then seemingly there's a point of or a gap in the knowledge in terms of, well, who really benefited from the French Revolution. So it wasn't the French, right? It was those who were non-French. And after the French Revolution, we see who can become citizen. You know, it's again, it's the small heads, the Jews who are able to become citizens in that sense. And the principle is laid there. Well, if a Jew can become a citizen of France, well, does that negate other races or other groups from becoming citizens? And so, you know, I'm just taking notes from here from American Reforms Contra Hall, but, you know, he highlights this quote from Bishop Hudal in 1937, and he says here, "No one can deny that since the French Revolution, with its principles on peoples and human rights, a mixture of peoples and races has grown up in Europe, in which the consciousness of nationality, race, and their high cultural values has often lost all significance." And again, that's essentially extending from liberalism. It doesn't matter anymore what these things are, and that's a big shame. It's a liberal viewpoint. And you're not being intellectually honest if you don't see how that's a liberal viewpoint. And so I'm hoping at some point Mr. Hall is willing to engage with the proper people on this subject, because it is an important subject, especially in the West as our days move forward here. Because potentially in 2042, you know, in America at least, you know, white people will be a minority. So.
Well, and we've seen, you know, Augustine could speak to this more, but, you know, people said, oh, once things get bad in Rhodesia, people will wake up. Once things get bad in South Africa, people will wake up. Once things get bad in such and such a place, think people will wake up. Well, did anyone wake up in Chicago? Did anyone wake up in Los Angeles after the Watts riots? Did anyone wake up in, you know, Harlem? Like, no, they just moved. And, you know, this is a form of theft. When you force people out at the barrel of a gun or with the threat of bombs or rapes or assaults, and they're forced to take a loss on property and leave, you know, you're stealing the ashes of their fathers and the temples of their gods from them. When your family has been in a spot for 100 years and your grandfather built the church and he's buried in that in the graveyard of that church, and then you're forced out due to non-white violence. Or just non-whites moving in and destroying your ability to make a living. You're being stolen from. Your children have a right to go to that church and see their great grandfather's grave after Mass.
Yeah.
And go ahead, sir.
Well, no, please, can I finish your train of thought?
Well, I was just going to say, like, if that was true, right? If what Mr. Hall says about race not mattering much and then South Africa would be a paradise. It's not. Rhodesia would be a paradise. It's not. Chicago would be a paradise. It's not. Montreal would be a paradise. It's not. So if Mr. Hall can point to be one place where non-whites took over a white area and things turned out great, I'll listen. But I doubt he can come up with a single example.
Yeah. The coming disaster that the West faces, America and Europe in particular, in the coming years, is essentially South Africa and Rhodesia writ large across the parchment of history. It will be an absolute unmitigated disaster beyond all of our wildest imaginations. And no one will actually wake up. No one will do anything. As you say, you know, things got bad in Rhodesia, the whites left. Things got bad in South Africa. The whites who did fight were branded as terrorists and pushed out. Eugene Terblanche died, you know, rejected, disposed, hacked to death in his own home. You know, like, he became politically irrelevant by the end, just purely from the amount of pressure put on him. And those who do not desire this future for their countries, as they rightly shouldn't, and they have a right to change the course of history. The foundational reality of this resistance is a man's creed. You know, his religion, his church, its community. And to bring this circling back to the original topic of the whole podcast, is that the society stands at a crossroads now. You know, it can fill that gap of the traditional church, which confronts these realities in a real and solid way, which gives its members the ability to interact with reality on good and solid ground. And unfortunately, my experience here in South Africa and Africa in general, I don't know what it's like in Europe or America, though if the recent article that they put out is any indication, I wouldn't say it's good. But the society is not fulfilling that reality. Unfortunately, it's Kennedy Hall is a layman, you know, and as much as he knows, at the end of the day, he is a layman. But he is a symptom of a larger problem that infects at least, you know, this district of Africa, of the society at any rate, where it's traditionalism to a point, and liberalism in all matters of secular faculty, if you want to call it that. There was a priest that visited while I was staying at the priory for pre-seminary. He was taught by Bishop Williamson. He was one of the few society priests that I had met who had shared my views on race. And he said something very interesting to me. He said, the spirit of the Holy Ghost Fathers still haunts the halls of Menzingen, in the sense that Archbishop Lefebvre's work was primarily to the Africans throughout his life. And in some recess, at least the district in Africa still sees itself as the custodian of that legacy, which is good. You know, it's fine. I mean, I'm not saying that we mustn't evangelize the Africans, but when it comes to a place like South Africa, it actively harms, or even Rhodesia have, you know, they recently shut down their priory there, but they did have a presence there. But when it comes to places like Rhodesia and South Africa with a white population, which we belong here, you know, the Afrikaners often call themselves the white tribe of Africa, you know, and we are essentially pushed aside and not given proper recognition. And in many instances, this whole topic entirely has pushed out the door. You know, you're not allowed to talk about that. It's non-essential. I became a social pariah at my parish because, you know, I said, well, you know, this is important to talk about. And the responses I got were essentially, it's not important. It's not going to result in the salvation of your soul. So you need to shut up about it and leave it at that. You know, so it's disappointing in the long term. I don't know. I'm hoping America is different.
Absolutely. And just to bring up a point, to touch off on a point Augustine made, there wouldn't be a South Africa without white people. Like, when did the Dutch get there? 1637? I can't remember.
Yes, my date's pretty bad.
Well, okay, so but the Boers have been in South Africa for 400 years.
Yeah, my family's been here since the 17th century. Yeah.
Right. Okay, so 350 at a minimum, close to 400. Just like white people have been in America since, you know, the 17th century. And without white people, there is no Canada. Canada was founded by white people. New Zealand was founded by white people. Australia was founded by white people. The United States of America was founded by white people. South Africa was founded by white people. Britain was founded by white people. You know, Archbishop Lefebvre was a Frenchman. Mbugu, just because he was born in Paris, is not French. He's West African. Okay, you can't just being born in France, like, okay, just because you're born in this, just because our Lord was born in a stable doesn't make him a mule. Okay, like, this is not, right? This is not complicated. And for the people that want to, like, oh, well, we can't talk about race. Do you know what Archbishop Lefebvre himself, after spending 30 years as a priest and bishop of the Holy Ghost Fathers in West Africa, they called him racist because he was like, these people are not prepared to take over the reins of their society. They need white supervision. To the extent that anything good happened in West Africa, the only reason you have a Cardinal Serra or a Cardinal Arinze, right, based Cardinal Arinze, is Archbishop Lefebvre taught him. I don't know if he taught him personally, but the Holy Ghost Fathers are the ones who exorcised the demons that his family worshipped and taught him the true faith. So, you know, and Archbishop Lefebvre was against mass immigration to Europe. He said before he died 30 years ago, your daughters will get raped by these Muslims. They will attack you in the street. Right. Now, if I say that, I'm a racist. So for agreeing with the Archbishop, I'm a racist. For understanding basic facts about reality, I'm racist.
And it's yeah, exactly. But it's a sinister game that they play that I encountered. I brought up similar points, of course, as well. But it becomes like a word game, a semantics game, with a lot of opposition that I found was, but if they're good Catholics and they assimilate to the culture, then, you know, surely they deserve to stay. And you know, on the face of it, it's a very meritocratic way of arguing, and you know, it's like, it tugs at your heartstrings, like, oh, you know, but no, they don't belong. They will never be French, you know. Mbungo's family didn't die during the Napoleonic Wars, you know, during Crusades. He has no blood investment in the land. Why would he care?
Well, he's only there to steal, and he's gonna lie about it, right? Like,
exactly. That's
right. Like, why did, you know, if South Africa was this horrible racist place where black people were oppressed and marginalized and treated terribly, and it was just awful, and every 80s movie had to have like Boer bad guys, right? Right, like, then why did tens of millions of Bantus go there in the 70s, 80s, and 90s? Why? Yeah. Why did? Well, because it was a functioning white country in 1993. And it's the same reason that Filipinos come to America. It's a functioning white country. It's the same reason then Indonesians and Vietnamese go to Australia, and Chinese go to Australia. Everyone wants to live in a functioning white Christian country. Well, I'm sorry that the demand for a white government exceeds the supply by such a massive factor. But, you know, until you guys embrace the cross of Christ for 1,000 years, then you can have Christian government. But you need 1,000 years of the church disciplining and teaching you, you know, and maybe genetically it's not possible. But if it is genetically possible to, you know, kind of eugenically, like through prohibition of polygamy and cousin marriage and hanging murderers as Christendom used to do, don't even get me started on the recent changes to the teaching on the death penalty, right? Like, whatever.
Yeah.
Right. If you think that, like, executing criminals and punishment of single momery, keeping out foreigners, particularly hostile foreigners of a different racial group, then because he was against all of those things. Thomas writes in the Summa and Summa Contra Gentiles, like, oh, we shouldn't have Turks here. We should hang thieves. We shouldn't allow sexually promiscuous people to have free reign in a society. So is our society today a more Christian than Thomas's University of Paris? Because they were racist, but by today's standards, they were racist, sexist, homophobic, you know, intolerant, anti-Semitic, really anti-Semitic. And, you know, again, Mr. Hall, like, I'm reaching my hand out in friendship to you. I would love to have a conversation. but you're just wrong. And you're wrong in a very deleterious and dangerous way.
You know, I don't want to like lay too harshly on this point. But we see this with all non-whites. With the Latinos that come over here. Like I was told my entire life, and I'm sure you guys can agree, or you guys saw this, that they're conservatives, that they'll come over and vote conservative and vote for the GOP. But it's like, then you look at any of this Pew report that comes out about Latinos that come over, the Mexicans come over, they drop their Catholicism within one generation. It's a 15% drop. You know, with 2014, they were 67% Catholic. 2020, they're under 50%. So there's more of this racial aspect than we're willing to give credit for. That it's not just like faith alone. You know, there has to be something more to this. There's obviously something more biological. That it's they engage with this like Mammonism, liberalism. It's they drop their faith almost immediately.
Yeah, I would argue in that sense too. And perhaps it is this grace perfecting nature in terms of them being relatively recent converts. But they're more subverted by the Jewish Americanist material, right? Where it's telling you all that matters is your material status in society. So whereas their old culture in Mexico, the Philippines, you know, whatever nation you want to say they're coming from, that was seemingly like a binding force. But now that you're in America, you know, just become wealthy. And that's all the only thing that matters. So of course, yeah, they just, and the same could apply to Muslims too. They don't have that Islamic force that is keeping them in their religion. And so, yeah, they even some of them too will just discard the religion altogether because it's all about materialism and then the present advantages you can gain by being wealthy.
No, I think that there's more than a little bit of a racial component to this because the Greeks became Catholic and they gave us the church fathers. You know, 500 years after the Greeks were Catholic, they gave us the scriptures and the church fathers. And Mexicans have been Catholic for 500 years, and they give us Our Lady Guadalupe tattoos and lots of candles.
Yeah. I always find the E. Michael Jones argument, as I found it, that you know, the only thing that separates us from them is 1,000 years of Christendom is a bit spurious. You know, if that were the case, Ethiopia would be a shining star in Africa, but they're more likely to rape you than the rest of them. You know, so I don't know.
It's obvious to everyone that this is a real problem. For anyone who spends more than like 2 seconds looking at it, it's obvious that this is a real issue. And, you know, again, respect to Dr. Jones. I've interviewed the man. I've profited greatly from his work, but he's wrong on this. You know, again, I really enjoyed Kennedy Hall's book. I like him personally, and I like a lot of the stuff he's done, but he's wrong on this. And I think it was with the conversation they referenced, I think it was with Tim Flanders. So, you know, like, there's another man I've profited greatly from a lot of his stuff. But until you deal with this honestly, okay, if you don't deal with racial issues honestly, you're going to sink the public fisc of the West. You're going to create civil wars. You're going to create, you know, 30 churches in Canada burned down over racial issues. If you think that the Muslims who are coming to France, coming to Germany, coming to Spain, won't burn down churches because they see them as white European and hostile to them, where do you know when Africans move into a formerly Catholic neighborhood in Chicago, do they take care of the church? Do they respect the grounds? Do they, you know, stand in awe of the stained glass and the beautiful architecture and silently go inside to pray? Maybe one or two of them, but for the most part, they just kind of sit around outside and menace people who do try to go to church there. And they put graffiti up on the church and throw rocks through the windows. And, you know, when Johannesburg got handed to the blacks, did they like stand in awe of the great architectural marvels they've been given and like take care of them, or did they trash it?
No, of course not. You look at Johannesburg today, it looks worse than Nagasaki did after the bomb.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's Ponte Tower was the largest like residential, and I can't remember if that was in Durban or South Africa, or Johannesburg. I can't remember.
It's Johannesburg.
Okay, so there's for those of you who don't know, there's this place called Ponte Tower in South Africa. There was this really kind of modernist but interesting building. It was a hollow cylinder apartment building. So there was light coming in from both inside and outside. And it was, I think, like 12 stories tall or something. Not to my taste. I don't particularly like modern architecture, but it was well put together. The Africans moved in and they treated the interior instead of like a garden or someplace. They filled like the first 5 stories with trash.
Yeah, there's even dead bodies decomposing in there that they found over the years. It's just, it's a trash heap now.
Yeah, I mean, and South Side of Chicago is a trash heap, and you know, New Orleans, Louisiana is a trash heap, and any Houston is a trash heap. Any place where blacks become politically sovereign becomes a trash heap. Or Indians, just, you know, subcontinental Indians, just as bad or worse. I mean, they have trash heaps so bad there that, like, beacons on them so planes don't run into them, right? And these are people that were given St. Thomas the Apostle and St. Francis Xavier, one of the greatest evangelists in the history of the church. They were given a literal apostle, the man who literally put his hand inside the side of our Lord. And he went all the way there and to atone for his doubt and try and spread the gospel. And what do? They reject it in favor of demons. And, you know, St. Francis Xavier, you know, this one of the greatest missionaries in the history of the church, this new St. Paul, goes there and tries to save these people. And what do? Some of them accept it. Most of them reject it in favor of demons. And if I say I don't want people who worship demons and believe in reincarnation so they don't care about the lives or safety of my family, right? I don't want them here. Like, that's a problem. I'm the bad guy for that. Like, no, actually, bishops, like, by enabling this, you're a wolf. You're supposed to be a shepherd.
Yeah, in fact, with St. Francis Xavier, he was so disgusted by, because, you know, he was trying to learn the Hindu religion, at least to evangelize, but he got to a point where, after he had heard enough, he's like, all right, that's enough. I don't want to hear any more about your religion. It's completely based on false premises.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, can anyone imagine in the height of Christendom in the 13th century, there were like Saracen pirate raids across the Mediterranean to kidnap and kill, like, you know, particularly like beautiful Christian women. And that has been a thing on the Mediterranean and the Black Sea for, you know, 1,000 years. Can anyone imagine what, like, the Holy Father, Pope Pius V, would have said if the bishop or the bishop in charge of a particular area and the baron in charge of that area were just like, oh, no, this is fine. We're just going to let Saracens in, and they're going to just randomly, you know, like, rob people, rape people, carry them off into slavery, get them really drunk, and then take all their stuff. Like, can anyone imagine, the barons who signed the Magna Carta, like, being allowed to continue in their office if, like, Cornwall was being raided by Saracens and they did nothing? It's absurd on its face. Like, the entire Areban would have been called, a crusade would have been, you know, like, leveled if there were just roving bands of Somali of Saracens, you know, like, randomly attacking, you know, good Christian women in little market towns on, you know, in southern England or southern France. Like, it just wouldn't have been acceptable. And yet, somehow, we're supposed to accept, like, roving bands of Africans robbing and stealing from Americans, robbing and stealing from Turks, or robbing and stealing from Germans or British people or French people. or you know, just South Africans, right? Like, we're just supposed to accept this because reasons. Like, well, and to Augustine's point earlier, like, this is because you are liberal. You know, the Archbishop was right. You are all children of the revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to reject liberalism whole and entire. It's not like a halfway thing. Like, you know, it's like being a pervert. You're either a pervert or you're not a pervert.
So in the SSPX book, the defense book by Kennedy Hall, you know, he brings to the point that the Archbishop says that we were living through the culmination of all errors. And it's you know, and while it's true, I don't think anybody can argue against that. It's you know, we practice what we preach there, fella. It's we have to think the end conclusions to all of our opinions. You know, if we want how do I want to put this? If we want you know, this traditional Catholic society, we have to be a little racist. We have to have an in-group preference. We can't
a lot of racists.
Well, you know, I obviously, you know, racism. Yeah, you guys, we're all on the same page, but it's you know, I don't know who's going to be listening to this. So, like, being pro-white is considered racist to a lot of these liberals, to a lot of Catholics. You know, if we're like, oh, hey, you know, I want to support white people, but I don't care about the Haitians that are eating my neighbor's cats. Like, that is racist to trads, to the layman. To the archbishops, or to the bishop, the American bishops, that is racist. So is it the sin of racism? No. Is it having any preference? No. But it's, you know, I'm talking on the terms of our potential listeners maybe understand. But it's, I do want to bring up the point of, you know, wanting even the conservative position is liberal. You know, wanting legal immigration, you're still displacing whites. You're still displacing, you know, taking. You have to feed these people that are coming in legally. You know, with all the H-1Bs or all the Mexicans that President Trump wants to bring in, or you know, it's like they have to take American jobs, or the Chinese that our president wants to bring in. You know, these jobs can go to white people. These jobs can go to, you know, some brilliant tech, white tech startup. But it's no, they're going to be profited, or they're going to be the money and opportunities. Go ahead.
These universities only have so many slots.
Absolutely.
And they were put together, like, you know, every one of these land-grant universities, you can go into the founding statute, and it's like to prosper the people of Ohio I remember looking up like one of the first. So if you go to like the University of Pennsylvania, right? It's like in order that the people of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania be, you know, uplifted by education and blah, you know, like this long flowery thing, it was for the people of Pennsylvania to improve themselves. Absolutely. It's for the people of Ohio or West Virginia or Texas or wherever. The whole point of these land grant universities in America was like there were deserving poor white or deserving poor Americans. They didn't have access to education because they were poor. They deserved to be uplifted. Well, nowhere in the statute of this does it say, you know, actually, we're going to take a bunch of non-deserving, non-poor people from Uzbekistan and uplift them at the expense of people in America.
Yeah, I live slightly close to a major university. I actually even went to one. And that's essentially what the major universities have become. They no longer serve that state. You know, now they are subservient to this, again, this globalist ideology, where, again, it doesn't matter your race, religion, you know, like the one I'm thinking of that's close by to me, you know, there's the Hindu temple, there's the synagogue, there is every denomination of Catholic, there is even the Muslim prayer house, you know, there's everything. And this is across the board with all of the major universities in the United States. And that's largely because, you know, they've been infiltrated, you know, with the Frankfurt School, essentially. You know, they got these positions of power, and then they decided that, no, it should be fair, right? In the wrong context, obviously, you know, like, well, we have to serve everyone. It's not fair to the non-white, you know, we need to let these, you know, these nons essentially into our universities. because that's the democratic way. Otherwise, how can you have a true democracy if it's not equally represented by everyone? And so that's kind of where we get to, and this is kind of the shame with like the modern SSPX, you know, say since 2012, you know, they're trying to make inroads to Rome. And so seemingly this articles, two of them they put out right now, I think there might be a more coming, I'm not sure, but it's essentially trying to make inroads with Rome, with the modern prelatry of Rome, the globalist Rome that obviously denies even the trueness of the faith. And so again, yeah, they're trying to use words that have a certain connotation, like you said, Patrick, in terms of racism. You know, like, when does racism ever come into the vocabulary of the Western person? You know, it's not till like the early 20th century, and depending on who you're talking to, for me, I would say it came from Trotsky, right? You know, you're trying to
Lev Davidovich Bronstein.
Yeah, exactly. Right, you're trying to undermine the white Russians, you know, the legitimate Russians, you know, prior to the Bolshevik Revolution there. So again, you're trying to delegitimize, you know, the natural humans living there, and the loyalties and all the in-group preferences. And yeah, you're just trying to undermine it. So yeah, they're even using the language, which is the sad part too. They're falling for it because that's just what the modern world is going. And so that's essentially the directive or the direction that they've been taking since 2012 when they kicked out Williamson.
Yeah, and they kicked out Williamson for relatively mild stuff. He was the best bishop in the world until his late passing, you know, about a year ago. God rest his soul. But do you understand, bishops? I mean, if any of you are listening to this, let me be as crystal clear as I possibly can. Right now, you are forcing every white man under 50 to choose between him having a worldly future or him staying in the church. And you have not made it clear that staying in the church is important, and millions of them, probably the majority, are going to say, if committing suicide and being a Christian, if being a Catholic requires me to commit suicide, I'm out of here. They're going to leave in droves. They've already left in droves. Those young men that have recently filled the pews, because there's young Gen Z and Gen Alpha men looking for meaning in life. If you tell them they have to commit cultural, fiscal, social suicide in order to maintain your good graces, they're just going to tell you to go fly a kite. They don't care. Okay? They do not care. At the event this past weekend, I had several young men. You know, I was one of the older guys there because I'm in my mid-40s. And I'm old now, which is sometimes difficult to come to grips with, but it is what it is. Okay, I had multiple young men come up to me, and the whole thing was young men saying, how do we navigate a system that hates us? And, you know, a couple of them said, you know, thank you for caring about us. And it's really sad and it's wrong that some random podcaster in the middle of nowhere in the forest should care about these young men more than their putative shepherds. But that's where we're at. And if you don't reverse course, they're rightly going to see you as an enemy. If you're the one, if Catholic Social Services, Catholic Relief Services, you know, Catholic Immigration Services, whatever umbrella organization, if you're the one who brought Trinda Aragua to their town and Trinda Aragua kills their sister, which has happened in America, or MS-13 or whatever, if they see that and then they act like you're an enemy, don't be surprised when that happens, okay? And Trinda Aragua or MS-13, they're Satanists. They're not going to say, oh, thank you, I'm going to be a good, pious Catholic now, Bishop. They see you as a sucker because you are a sucker. Or you're either a sucker or you're actively working for Satan.
You know,
oh,
I I don't know if you want to talk about this SSPX article about their race, this Catholicism and Race Part 1. And we kind of tie it in. You know, it talks about, it jumps straight to, you know, deny Nazism. And I don't think anybody on this panel wants to see bishops and or any clergy, anyone supposed that is blessed by supposed to serve Christ, arrested for being cultural subversives. But it's, you know, I don't, you know, we just had, you know, hopefully God rest his soul, and hopefully he accepted Christ on his death. But James Watson just passed away. The father of the genome, discovering the genome. So it's like, I don't know why this Catholic publication is jumping straight to denying Nazism instead of, you know, arguing science. Unless, you know, I understand that a lot of scientists are kind of gay and retarded, and that's a newer thing. But the church has spent centuries supporting scientists, supporting, you know, understanding the material world. I think that's what the adaptation is you know, a concept. You know, the Big Bang is a concept that was founded by a Catholic. So it's, you know, we can't deny some science. You know, some of it, we have to engage with the material world. Like, I understand it's scary. Nazis are scary because of, you know, a Jew told you so. But it's, you know, if we have to engage with some material world, material understanding of the world.
Well, I think we've, I mean, read the article, and then with the understanding that, like, if the society was confronted with such a theologically liberal argument as opposed to a politically liberal argument, they'd be on their back legs complaining about it, which is they should be, right? You know, to their credit, they've gone after this latest nonsense from Tuco Fernandez about the mediatrix, about you know, basically blaspheming Our Lady, and they did a pretty good job. The legacy of Pope Francis, right? They did a pretty good job talking about how terrible he was. But his political liberalism is intertwined with his social, with his theological liberalism. They're one and the same. They're, you know, two wings of the same evil bird of liberalism. And you can't accept the premises of one without accepting the premises of the other. It's just not possible.
Yeah, they've essentially lost sight of the forest for a tree. They have forgotten that liberalism is, as you said, a two-winged bird. It's not just theological. There is a political element to this because we live in a political reality, you know. So they're trying to address one without trying to sweep the other under the carpet, and it's going to backfire if they don't reverse course.
Well, and again, those young men that have, you know, come to tradition in the last 5-10 years because of a rejection of political liberalism, if they find the same religion, the same liberalism in their churches, they're just going to walk out the door.
Yeah, absolutely. But any final comments? Anybody wants to wrap this up? How we wrap this up?
Well, I just had one thing when I was thinking of Augustine, you know, with his interactions he's had with his fellow parishioners. You know, I was just thinking of the quote of St. John Chrysostom. And this will just be my final thought, too. And so St. John Chrysostom says here, "If any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, that is, those who are nearly related to him, he is worse than an infidel. And so says Isaiah, the chief of the prophets, you shall not overlook your kinsmen of your own seed. Isaiah 58:7. For if a man deserts those who are united by ties of kindred and affinity, how shall he be affectionate towards others? Will it not have the appearance of vainglory when benefiting others he slights his own relations and does not provide for them? And what will be said if instructing others he neglects his own, though he has greater facilities and a higher obligation to benefit them?"
Absolutely.
Amen. Yeah, well, and not only does St. Paul enjoin us to take care of our own in sacred scripture and the church doctors and fathers, you know, I don't think you can get a much higher authority than St. John Chrysostom, who's, you know, one of the eight great doctors of the church. You know, this is the highest teaching authority of it out there. And to that point, you know, we underwent something in 2020 and 2021 in COVID, where you saw who was going to stand with you and who was going to flip. And if someone, you know, got the jab, and, you know, you set up a clandestine mass and you let people know the person who flipped was the guy with a non-white wife or who got the jab. Okay. That's just what happened. The people who I can't ask them to disavow their own wife and children, but if you married a non-white and you live in a white society, you should, and you have very stern political opinions about the racial makeup of the society, be quiet. Okay. You lost the right to comment on politics, on matters of the polis, when you married outside the polis and you brought in a foreign bride. The people who like their incentive, their children, their family are foreigners. So why what sane society lets foreigners decide? They're not citizens, they're foreigners. This is not complicated. And if you're a Bantu, you're not a South African. You're not a Boer.
Yeah.
Like, it's not your state. You didn't build it. If you're an African in the United States was not built for you. It was built for Northwest Europeans, mostly Protestants. But unless you're, you know, German, French, British, Scandinavian, a little bit of Italian, maybe, this isn't for you. And it's not evil that it be not for you. It just is. Like water's wet and fire burns. It's just a dealing with the facts. And if you think that just because some people are capable of building a really nice house or a really nice neighborhood, that everyone deserves to come to that neighborhood and live there and squat there, you're no different than the people who think that everyone can come to salvation and not believe in Jesus. It's no different politically than the theological mess that is the people that don't think, are, you know, despite his own words, that, you know, the only way to the Father is through Jesus, through our Lord. And I just have very little patience for people who continue to believe, you know, liberal stuff about politics and insist that they're theologically conservative. Like, no, you're not. It's not, they're intrinsically tied.
Well, I think that wraps us up. Thank you, fellas. I'll end with this. You know, the Sacred Heart of Jesus, have mercy on us. I'm glad we did this. It took a little longer for everybody to get together than I wanted to, but you know, we sat down, we got it. God bless everybody. Read Arnold's article. I'll link it in the show notes. Extremely important. We'll have him back on to talk about it. You know, Jerome, Augustine, thank you guys for coming on. Obviously, Jerome, we'll get together more often. God bless everybody.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
God bless.
Thanks for having us.